My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
The Thursday night game last night. Middle screen, Coach Middle Screen texting in. You can text the show 713-572-4610 if you want to hit us up. We're going to get to the trash talk between CJ and Indianapolis here in just a second. Middle Screen says, it's crazy to me the ref called that a touchdown when he was standing right there. It seemed clear live that the foot was out. However, I'm particularly amazing at judging catch and no catch. You are amazing, Middle Screen. Here's what I would say. This is what popped into my head before I even saw who was texting it in. Is that a lot of times the referees on the field will make, if it's a 50-50 call, they'll make the call that will trigger an automatic review from the booth. You know, so if it's a touchdown, they automatically review that. That's why when there's a fumble and they're not sure, they usually call it a fumble because then it has to be reviewed because it's a turnover.
And they can continue play that way and everything. It's a lot easier to overturn that than to, you know, say that it was a clear recovery and everything else like that. I was surprised that there were that, and maybe it's just flat out because you want the Chiefs to lose. I get that. I wanted it to be a touchdown. Sometimes I'm disappointed in myself that I don't hate the Chiefs more than I do. They annoy me now. When Xavier Worthy shows up early in that game and then often with his two touchdowns and you realize, man, okay, there's still valid concerns about Xavier Worthy's size, I guess, but I don't think it matters on that team. Rashee Rice, honestly, it's not even a moral thing. It's not like Rashee Rice, like his crime was a serious crime. His alleged crime was a serious crime and everything. It wasn't like a domestic violence type thing or something like that. So it's not like I'm up in arms morally about it. And yet, he's out there on the field in week one.
Right.
He's just after, you know, running just as fast on the field as he did on I-45 away from that accident scene. It's not even the Chiefs themselves. It's a whole damn situation. And then the Chiefs, like, clearly, Sean, you know, I don't like to talk about officiating all that much, but my God. You flag the Ravens three times for illegal formations on their first drive, trying to set the tone for how you're going to officiate offensive linemen deep in the backfield. And then Jawan Taylor just gets away with it all game, except for a couple times they called it. He's off. I mean, he's false starting almost every single snap. The offensive tackle for the Chiefs.
Yep.
The Chiefs touchdown where there was the big scrum. You know, Pat Mahomes comes up, and there's they had the ball carrier moving backwards, and the official in the booth is like, well, sometimes you give it a little leeway there when you're on the goal
line. They got a lot of leeway on a lot of things last night.
A leeway with the Chiefs, The Chiefs get a lot of leeway.
They just showed the Zay Flowers miss. I think what most people saw is Lamar Jackson missing Zay Flowers in real time. They saw it as that, and as you pointed out, Lamar Jackson... I guess said after the game, he was actually looking at Rashad Bateman.
He was looking at Rashad Bateman, and then I think the way he phrased it didn't make sense. I think he was kind of maybe, I think he made a last second decision that maybe made the errant throw.
They just showed the play on TV in the studio here, and they showed it from behind the line, from behind Lamar Jackson, and I can see that. I think he was expecting Rashad Bateman to keep running, to keep crossing. And Rashad Bateman kind of stopped, and so it kind of stopped, and Zay Flowers happened to be standing there wide open, so it looked like it was intended for Zay Flowers.
But it ended up, wondering like, well, it's still a high pass though. But so like maybe he did end up as Rashad Bateman stopped, he's adjusting and throwing to Flowers. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
know. He missed both of them badly. Either one.
Right. Yeah. Regardless of the reason, a couple of our listeners have already texted this in. Lamar Jackson is scary as hell. He was very, the Texans have no ability to talk any smack about Lamar Jackson. But if you compare Lamar Jackson to CJ Stroud, the thing that's glaring in watching that game is that CJ is such a great anticipation thrower.
Yeah, big time.
Where Lamar is more of a see it, throw it, does a great job in the passing game, but it just doesn't feel like art the way it does when CJ is starting his throwing motion before Nico Collins is even really into his break yet. Like all that stuff, CJ's just really advanced with it, and I think, you know, over time that tends to age better all the other things.
Certainly than a running quarterback. I mean, Lamar Jackson is going to, we've seen it with all these guys that run the ball a ton, you know, just over time that can't be all that you're doing. Or a huge part of what you're doing, like it was for Lamar Jackson carrying the ball 16 times last night, most of them on designed runs. All right, let's get to CJ here. CJ and Indy. Indy and CJ. These two sides appear to not like each other very much. I don't know if this is where it all started. This is not directed at anybody in particular with the Colts. This was just sort of a drive-by on the city of Indianapolis. This was CJ sitting in the back of an SUV. His documentary that they filmed, like a 20-25 minute documentary about the offseason prior to his rookie year, where in a part of it, he invited Tank Dell and Nico Collins and Dalton Schultz and others to come out to LA and do a little bonding, you know, work out, go out at night, dinners, play video games, sit in the hot tub.
Going out at night, it was like going bowling.
Like CJ style going out at night. Yeah. And so they're all in this SUV. And CJ is talking about his friend Caleb, who is in the SUV as well, who sort of is like handles his business. He's like what Uncle Nate used to be for Johnny Manziel, you know, like
except like an actual somebody who's qualified.
He's really good at it, yeah, unlike Uncle Nate.
He's not just a glorified bag man,
right? Yeah. Right. So Caleb is one of CJ's high school friends, and here's CJ talking about like the having to talk Caleb into moving to Houston to be with him, and Indy catches one here.
I actually appreciated it, and I kept asking him, and he finally buzzed. But I guarantee if I went to the Colts or to a weak city, he would have been, and I don't blame him.
If I went to the Colts or some weak city, and I wouldn't blame him. You love that, Seth.
I love it so much. Some weak city.
so that was.
It is. I think Indianapolisians even feel that way. They know they've got a weak city.
I'm trying to look up
what you're supposed to call people from Indianapolis. I call them the poop eaters. Ben, remind the people of why they were called the poop eaters.
He estimated that just the residents of Indianapolis ate about 2,000 pounds of cow manure every year.
Yeah, it's really disgusting. So,
did they mean a piece or is a cumulative city?
I'm guessing it was per capita.
Okay.
I think that was that was from Stuff You Should Know, I think, NPR podcast.
The average Indianapolisian eats a ton of manure each year. Yeah.
Now, those stats were from probably, I think it was like 2020. So not, who knows?
Yeah.
It was actually from like the late 80s or early 1900s. But anyway, so the 2,000 pounds of manure eaters per year Like they know that it's not a great city.
Yeah.
You know, they gotta like they try to act like everybody cares about Formula One racing and or IndyCar racing and everything. But other than that, they don't really have a lot going for them.
Okay, so the real battle, the battle lines have been between C.J. Stroud and the guys on the In the Trenches podcast, I should say.
Zaire Franklin's podcast has E.J. Speed, his fellow linebacker from the Colts, up there on the show with him a lot.
Yeah, so it's really Zaire Franklin and E.J. Speed going against CJ. Now, here's the thing. This all started with the two of them and at least one other person on the podcast back in January, in mid-January, actually marveling at CJ and giving him his props for how well he played in that Week 18 game against the Colts.
I gotta be honest, I gotta give that respect to CJ, man. Hell of a young player, bro. Young player. Hell of a player, period. I ain't gonna lie to you, bro. That second and 14 that he threw, bro, when he rolled out, bro, I ain't gonna hold you. So look, like, first of all, mad annoying. Ain't nothing worse in the defense than when you get them off schedule. Like, you get them first and 20, second and 20, third and 16, and them get it. Oh, my God. What?
It hurt. That hurt.
That hurt, bro. Oh, my God. You mad as on that first down. Like, what the, that's when you get the, what the happened? Ooh. Bro, look, we covering man to man. I swear to God, I'm a Singletary. Covering man. I see the pocket collapsing. Singletary start, you know, trying to break free, scramble drill. I plaster eyes on it. Ooh, he break. All right, whatever. Then I see the ball go. I think it's going out of bounds. I'm just watching that. Then I see Nico just running for that. Nah, ain't no way. He ain't doing. He caught that bitch. I'm like, Singletary just look at me like, that's CJ.
Yeah.
And that just let me know, like, damn, he be doing shit like that all the time.
Crazy part about playing a quarterback like CJ,
he for won't sure. even be looking at the read. And then you know he got about one more look before it get ugly for him. And then he look at your guy and you didn't plaster like, gotcha ass. And then this look somewhere else and throw the ball for a completion. You like, nah.
That's what I like about CJ the
That's
most.
That's your third read? You know how degrading that is for a quarterback to hit his third read?
That is degrading. That is phenomenal audio. I just want to say That's like right. that, that. As player podcasts go, stuff like that is so much more fun to me than like doing the X's and O's and stuff like that. Just hearing guys freak out about third and 16, second there's and 14.
There's a few good player podcasts and some former player podcasts where it is basically just guys telling. Marshawn Lynch had one where he was talking about the hardest he was ever hit by a linebacker was D'Amico Ryans. He told that story the other day. And it, like that stuff, people love that stuff. Like
that's
the feeling of what it's like. And it is, it's degrading. It's degrading when that guy, and that's when, the great thing about that is that that's when guys who are in coverage start blaming the pass rush.
Yeah.
And then the guys from the pass rush are blaming coverage for why
fingers.
They can't get
sacks.
Yeah. Fomenting discord.
Yeah.
Degradation.
That's
what CJ Stroud does.
He does. Yeah. He heightens the discord. So that was, so you're probably saying to yourself, Sean, that doesn't sound like trash talk to me. It wasn't. They really like CJ. Somewhere along the way at the Super Bowl, that podcast was back in the middle of January. Somewhere along the way at the Super Bowl in February, these three, EJ Speed, Zaire Franklin, and CJ Stroud encountered one another. And apparently CJ said some things to them that they construed as disrespectful at the Super Bowl. So it wasn't stated publicly. We'll get to CJ talking publicly on the $1 Million Worth of Game podcast in just a second.
Yeah.
But it wasn't publicly, but it was construed by the Colts as, okay, this is a little disrespectful. CJ talking trash, I guess, about him throwing for nearly 400 yards in a loss in week two against the Colts, got under their skin a little bit. Here was Zaire Franklin on Chris Long's podcast, the Green Light Pod, back on May the 9th, talking about just this, CJ running into him at the Super Bowl.
I'm not going to lie to you. I love CJ, man. I support all our young brothers at quarterback, but CJ, he didn't say a lot of wild stuff to me in our run-ins, you know, at the Super Bowl. I need to see that boy again.
What did he say?
We were talking, and he was, you know, how the Super Bowl is at Radio Row. You know, it's big, all our stuff going on. So he had the XM radio right before me. He was on there talking about how he cooked the Colts in both games. And I was just, I saw him, and I pulled him aside, and I was like, you know, when you play Anthony, you know, it was like 28-7 and like, the second quarter, we were kind of blowing you out. Yeah, you threw for 300 yards, but...
That's not a cooking.
Yeah, and he was like, bro, I ain't cook you. And I'm like, look, if that's what you consider a cooking with the loss, I mean, congratulations. And, you know, and then I have to remind him as well that he's never beaten Anthony.
Oh! I love this. You like, you're a psychological warfare guy.
Okay, well, he's never beaten Anthony. Also, Anthony didn't make it to the third quarter of that game.
Yeah, Anthony finished one of the four games he started last year. So there it is a little. Sometimes it's boring to talk about potential for injury because you can say it about every football game ever. I mean, Anthony Richardson still has to prove that he can finish more than 25% of the games he starts.
Yeah.
So that's a glaring statistic. Oh, and this is a team that likes to hit, Sean.
Yeah,
they like to hit.
Yeah.
Jimmy Ward ain't afraid of no smoke.
You're
not afraid of no flags.
You,
woo, you're, whoa, whoa. That's right. I pick up most of my slang from Zaire Franklin.
You do.
That's where I got respect my gangsta from.
They said that
about. That's what they said about. I use it all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, that's what they had said in that podcast about Dalton Schultz, that he said he respects his gangsta.
Yeah.
Because Dalton Schultz is Dalton Schultz doesn't go whining to the refs or anything. He'll get up in your face and ask for some more. Yeah.
Good job by Chris Long getting out of Zaire Franklin, you know, what was actually said.
And I love it in that moment. Chris Long sounded like Zaire Franklin's gay friend. He's like, what'd he say?
What'd he say?
Dish, girlfriend.
What'd he say?
That was good.
Save that, Ben. That'll get used again. Oh, that was funny. So CJ obviously got under their skin at the Super Bowl. And I honestly, if what Zaire Franklin is saying is true about CJ Stroud saying that he cooked them in two games, I'm a little bit on the Colts side in this one. That was a little Deshaun-like to excite your 385 yards passing in a double-digit loss.
Yeah.
Like, settle down, CJ. I kind of get it.
That was hard. If Texans fans can take themselves back, our listeners, our dear listeners, that was one of the hard things for me after that Colts game was that I didn't want to be like, you know, propaganda guy or anything. But there was a part of the way CJ played after they were down. And remember, they were down partly because CJ Stroud got strip sacked. And it wasn't, you know, that was a little bit of a look. Veteran quarterbacks are going to get strip sacked at times too. But that was something that CJ got a lot better at, is how to handle the ball with traffic around you. That was still a little bit of a welcome to the NFL type of phase there for CJ. So it was partly his fault that they were down as bad as they were. So, but there were things he did in that game. Yeah. It wasn't like he was just, you know, that huge deficit was in the first quarter. It wasn't like he was facing prevent defense the entire time.
Correct.
So, and he did some really good things in that game, but you didn't want to be in that trap of thinking like, oh, great, what are we going to do? Give ourselves, you know, pep talks and impressive losses for the rest of the year. So there is some truth to it, but yeah, they lost the game.
Yeah, they lost that game. I just remember saying to Clint right after that game was over up in the press box, I'm like, okay, one thing I know, CJ Stroud's not the problem after that game. You know, like he's not the problem.
And you remember the Jaguars coaches were telling Bucky Brooks before the game the next week, like, man, this kid, he's doing some crazy
stuff
for a rookie.
Yep. Yeah, he's got it. All right, so that was Zaire Franklin on the Greenlight podcast. We've got a couple more cuts here because this thing went back and forth for a while during the early summer months. Hell, this sustained us during the doldrums of the offseason at times. So after this, about 3 weeks later in early June, CJ and Tank Dell go on the $1 Million Worth of Game podcast. And they were on, it was like a two-hour podcast, but the subject of the Colts and the trash talk back and forth, and that very cut you just heard from Zaire Franklin came up with CJ. They may have even played it for him. I don't recall. But I want you to picture this. You're going to hear CJ talking about Zaire Franklin zipping back at him here. But I pulled this audio from a video of the three guys on the Trenches podcast watching CJ say this on their iPads. So picture Zaire Franklin and EJ Speed, and there was one other Colt in the room there, all holding iPads. Because if you hear like murmuring or laughing in the background, that's who it is. They're all sitting there watching this and putting it in the mental bank, getting ready for week one of the season.
But I know what time it is, though.
Uh-oh. You drop it.
Oh, you're a okay,
but
I guarantee if I went to the Colts or like to like a weak city, he would
be. And he be talking about me all the time, and I know he gonna see this. I ain't tripping.
Who?
Zaire Franklin from the Colts.
Hey, from Philly.
He said something the other day, was like on a podcast. He said that in person. I said something to him, like talking mess. I'm like, I don't remember that, to be real. Like, we was at the Super Bowl. I seen him, and somebody asked us to take a picture together. We took a picture together. I think I was just like talking, like, you know what I'm saying, like just on some cool shit. Like, we off the field. I'm not really tripping off you, bro.
So he was capping on the podcast?
I don't think he was capping. I might have said something, but it rubbed in the wrong way. But you know, y'all feeling a little sensitive, man. You know? The thing that I don't agree with all these podcasts these players have, my boy EJ, Speed, and I tell him this to his face. I don't even tripping. But, like, a lot of dudes come to these podcasts, oh, yeah, I'm coming to hit. I'm going to hit CJ in his face. I'm going to get him next year. Like, where I'm from, we say, why ain't you ain't do something where you was mad at? You was mad right there, my. Do something.
Right.
You could have made hella plays, bro. You could have made plays, dog. Right. You could have shut me up right there, but you didn't. We played him first game of the year. Yeah. We played out their plays. It's going to be rocking. Indy hates me already, and I love it.
Yeah, he loves it.
Hey, look, man, he said Philly sensitive.
That's what he said.
I'm a little sensitive.
That's what he said.
And I took that person.
Okay, so those were the guys. Those are the indie guys after they got done watching it,
Every time we talk about this, we get flooded with people explaining to us, mansplaining to us. They're like, hey, these guys actually like each other. You know, EJ Speed's friends with CJ. Let me tell you something. Maybe you guys don't have brothers. I love my brother. But Sean, when you were gone, Brandon Scott and I stumbled into a conversation about, I kind of openly wondered, like, if you've ever been in a fist fight in your life, at what age were you when you got in your last fist fight? And it ended up, you know, like early 20s was probably the mean on that. I realized after that show that I was like, oh yeah, I didn't count the fights I'd gotten in with my brother up to the age of 30. know, like, I just didn't count them. Because, yeah, I love my brother, but I got in multiple scraps with him. I remember I dented a Volkswagen in Austin with his body multiple times in my 20s. We loved each other. We're still brothers. But that, I didn't even count to it, but things boil over. It's almost worse when it's somebody that you like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't let the fact that these guys like each other or have respect for each other take away from the fact that I think there's extra heated emotion here.
Yeah.
This is, like, you think John Harbaugh and Jim Harbaugh were just, like, saying prayers, wishing for nothing but good tidings for the other one during their Super Bowl game?
No, God, no.
Especially Jim.
Well, right. Although John is looking more and more like Jim. Like, on the sidelines last night, I'm like, he's kind of got that same, like...
They've got strong genetics in that family.
They do. The
on the father's side. They all look alike at this point.
But John Harbaugh always looked like Steve Guttenberg to me, the actor. He's looking more like his brother now. But the dad looks like if you did age progression software on Jim Harbaugh like 25 years from now, that's the dad. He looks exactly like his dad. It's incredible.
You know who was looking rough last night?
Ooh.
A guy that forever has had the reputation of never aging. Chiefs fan Paul Rudd.
I didn't see him.
He looked like a confused, escaped mental patient. I don't know if he's preparing for a role or something, but he did not look like the Paul Rudd who never ages.
Dude.
He didn't look old. He just looked he looked kind of rough. I got to think. I think he's preparing for a role.
Yeah.
I don't know what that. He may be doing method acting or something.
That's gotta be nice to have a job where you can just lean on that if you start to look crappy. Like, oh yeah, I got a role coming up. That's why I put on 30 pounds. I'm going to start doing that here. Like, yeah, our boss is active. We're on YouTube now, so our bosses have asked us to start playing roles on the air, so I'm going to be the role of a very, very large fat guy. That's why I'm getting so fat.
You're prepping for a role. It's amazing how committed to the role you are. You know, you just, the guy, boy, wow, that guy's dedicated.
Guy. Yeah.
He's like Christian Bale.
He just
owns the role. Yeah.
It's weird. He never plays any roles of skinny guys. It's very strange. He's always fat guys in these roles that he has.
As people tend to point out to me, thinking they're the first one to ever point it out, I look a lot like Case Keenum. I think that I need Case Keenum to become a fixture. If you guys missed it, he was in an insurance ad last night for Progressive. Very funny insurance ad. If he can become a fixture as an insurance company spokesperson versus like choosing to go into coaching, take the insurance job, man. Oh, wow, that's a gig. And I could then work my way into kind of like a
big brother.
Chris Paul. What was Chris Paul's brother's
Cliff.
Role?
Cliff.
Cliff. I could be like the Cliff Paul to Case Keenum.
Case Keenum.
Or Case Keenum.
Either one. Yeah. Yeah.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever. And the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Wait, back to Bad Blood.
Back to Bad Blood. Before we get to the last cut here, where a couple days after they watched that CJ clip, the Trenches guys had kind of had it. Well, actually, let's play it, and then I have a question for Seth. Here's a couple days later. They've had a chance to process this for a couple days, the Trenches podcast guys, of CJ calling them sensitive, saying he didn't say the things that he said, all those things. Here they are. They've kind of had it with CJ at this point.
We going to dress, bro, or what? Because we going viral right now. Everybody, damn, Z, da, 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 da. I'm done.
I'm cool.
Nah, I ain't got enough to say.
CJ said what he's supposed to say, in my eyes. I'm glad he bobbing his shit, though, but like, you feel what I'm saying? Week one, like he said. So I'm standing on the week one. That's all he in it. Can say whatever they want to say. Week one, we strap on the pads and we go at it again. But to say I didn't make a play is crazy enough to say that I didn't make a play or whatever like that on him. We got footage, but you feel what I'm saying? He made plays on us. We made plays back and forth. But now that we know the smoker's in the air, let's get to it.
All I'm going to say is I let my beef slow cook, man. I like my married, so I'm done.
Yeah, this
I actually don't even care about last year anymore, bro. Yeah, it's all new. It's all new. I don't give a about nothing that happened. I don't care about what it was. I care about what it is.
It's a fact.
So, you feel me? That's just kind of where I'm at with it.
Week one is going to be crazy.
Momentous.
There's not really much to say about it, man. Look, we ain't going to be going back and forth on socials. Like, we ain't going to really run into each other. Like, this ain't basketball. This football. I get to put my hands on it.
This is going to be so fun on Sunday. I cannot wait.
This is kind of a low-key barbecue grudge match there, too.
It is.
Okay, you like your beef slow cooked, huh?
5-day brisket. Yep.
Whatever they do up in Kansas City with your burnt tips or whatever. That's okay, great. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I do respect Zaire. I think Zaire Franklin sometimes in the midst of all this, I think he thinks of himself as an old-school football guy, yet at the same time he realizes, like, ugh, This is very new age of me, isn't it? Like creating social media beef and everything. So he's conflicted, which is good. I like him conflicted.
I do too.
I want him to be in an existential crisis by the third quarter over who he even is as a football player anymore. Let's do that. Let's send him into an emotional turmoil. Thank you.
That would be nice. Of all the things that were said in those cuts, to me, you tell me, Seth, you're the former player. To me, the one that I feel like, of all the things said by the Colts, by CJ, I feel like the one that probably cuts deepest, the one that angers the other party the most, was CJ calling them sensitive. Am I right, man, about that?
Like, I don't know. It's tricky because when somebody calls you sensitive, you have that knee jerk, like, oh, I got to... That really got me, but I gotta really not display any sensitivity right now.
Right, right, right. Yeah, like that, it's a good shot by CJ. I would say,
like when somebody says when you're a kid and they're like, "Yo, why are you denying it? Why are you acting so guilty? Why are you so sensitive?"
Yeah.
I thought the one was CJ saying you could have did something then.
Yeah.
About EJ Speed. Yeah. I feel like that's like, oh, okay. Oh, I could have did something then. Yeah, I could do something right now too. Yeah, they're like, I don't care how much these guys technically like each other. This stuff pops up, man.
Yes.
This is what I would worry about classically. Like, take whatever you know about CJ in or out of it. I would worry in any circumstance like this. I don't want my quarterback being emotionally involved. You know, I want him to be calm, cool, collected assassin as much as possible, so he's making good decisions. And I trust that CJ won't let any kind of that type of stuff boil over into his play. But that's the standard thing that I would worry about in any scenario like this, is generally most quarterbacks don't play. They're not like pitchers where they play well when they're angry.
Right.
Except for the great ones. I think like Tom Brady, and so maybe I'm rethinking this. Maybe I would like CJ can prove himself really by being the quarterback that does like take it to another level when he's angry. Yeah, so I'm going to flip-flop on that. Okay. I do want CJ to be all about this. Okay. Yeah,
I like it. I like it a lot. Payne and Pendergast with you. So there's the chronology of the trash talk between these two. Between these two organizations, and it's going to be fun on Sunday. Noon kick here on Sports Radio 610. Stephon Diggs, named a captain earlier this week. He was pretty emotional about it yesterday in the locker room. He wasn't crying or anything, but this was clearly something that was super important to Stephon Diggs.
It was a personal goal of mine, but it was so personal that I didn't really share it with too many people. It was just something that I feel like I had to work for, I had to earn, and something I wanted for myself, and not just for me. I feel like being a captain and that level of accountability not only just holds those around you accountable, but holds yourself accountable. You are who you are. You can't run from that. And I did want to be a captain. I want to be able to lead this team to not only victories, just working hard and consistently setting the standard. You know what I'm saying? Of working hard and, you know, playing at a high level, competing at a high level, and being yourself. I got here from being myself. I wasn't nobody I wasn't. Kind of going back to what you said as well with CJ, he told me to be myself and take pride in being yourself. I'm saying that's why we brought you here. So it feels good. I'll take one more question if you got it.
On a recent,
I was happy.
Okay, so just to set the view of that there, for those of you that didn't see the video of that, Will Kunkel of Channel 26 was the one that asked the question. So Stephon Diggs is kind of his eye contact with Will Kunkel throughout that whole answer we just heard. And then at the end where he goes, I'll take one more question, he starts to turn to somebody with a question, and he turns back to Will Kunkel and says, I was happy as bleep, and then takes the last question. It was really
cool. That's cool. Yeah. You know what, honestly, and there's a tendency, you know, you never want to admit that you really wanted a role like that or whatever. Like, there's a dynamic there where it's really cool that he, you know, said it was a stated goal of his. Now, the part two, so regardless of, you know, and he had some good quotes about just the past being the past. You know, he said he wasn't going to talk bad about Buffalo, made an analogy about how he's not going to talk bad about his old girlfriend to make his new girlfriend feel good. And, you know, I admire the analogy. So I think that it's very, very real. It's not just a cliche or something that guys going to a new team and being in a new setting, they do sometimes they change or they mature or what have you. I can tell you just when I came to the Texans, I went from being a guy who was drafted by the Jaguars, was a young player with a bunch of veteran players on the team and everything. And I came to the Texans, and all of a sudden, like, I hadn't even really been thinking about it because I still thought of myself as a young player. But all of a sudden, I was thrust into a role where the coaches all were very much like wanted me to be one of the veteran guys on the team. And it changes you. And you start thinking about things differently. And you become, in a lot of ways, you become a different person because you're in a different environment, different expectations. And you see it happen a lot. And I think that for Diggs, regardless of what happened in Buffalo, it's cool that I think he's doing a lot of this consciously.
Yeah.
So whatever was his fault or Josh Allen's fault or Sean McDermott's fault, I think there's a part of him in that answer there where I think he realized, like, okay, I'm at a different stage in my career. I'm on a different team in a different situation. This is the role I'm going to play. And he can, you know, still be himself, but like whatever bygones are bygones, it's exciting. Like, I'm excited for Stefon Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
I think you kind of can take these leaps forward in maturity or wisdom or whatever you want to call it. And it feels like he's going about it methodically. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that for what it means for the Texans.
I do too. I like it for what it means for the Texans. I have a hard time believing that a big part of Stefon Diggs wanting to be a captain here wasn't at least partially fueled by all that was being said about him after being traded to the Texans. He's on.
Shut up the haters.
Yeah, yeah, like he's on. We know he's on social media. Like he's on there. Like we know he sees it and he hears it. Like it's. And I think that's a natural human nature thing to want to do, to go, hey, man, look, I probably part of that was my fault, but not to the degree it's being depicted by people up there. Even things like him, you know, he hadn't been named a captain yet when he was gesturing on the sidelines, talking to CJ and whatnot. And everybody from his two former cities are saying, see, look at this guy. Yeah, you can have him, Texans. He saw that. I think it has to at least be partially fueled by wanting to stick it to the old girlfriend a little bit, you know?
Maybe, yeah.
For me it would, you know?
Like, right. But I think part of it, though, too, is like kind of the maturation process is not worrying about stuff like that. So, it's finding a balance with everything. I think, you know, like I try to, you know, CJ and Bobby and D'Amico, I've noticed this especially with Slowick and CJ. They say the same things a lot of times when they start talking about leadership or decision, like all the various other non, you know, off the field types of things, to where you can tell they're kind of reading the same literature and everything.
Yeah.
And the one thing about I try to go deep in on the coaches and read the books they read. I read the books that Nick Caserio has read, all that. I think the one thing about leadership is, I mean, trust. Trust is a theme that keeps coming up. These guys, Slowick and D'Amico and CJ, all will, if you go through the transcripts and hit Command F, you're going to see trust come up a lot. The thing about it is that you could read a leadership book and have a checklist of things you should do as a leader, and you see that, I think, with a lot of guys that are trying to become leaders.
Yeah.
But like at the very root of it all, sometimes you have to fundamentally change the way you operate with other people, your teammates, your subordinates, whatever it might be. It's not like you can go through, you can check off the lists of things that make it look like you care about the people around you versus really changing your worldview and really like learning how to genuinely care about people and show them that you care. And that's like the deeper level of it. And I think that CJ very much gets that. I think Diggs being around CJ is going to be really good for just kind of learning that, like when to not get too worked up about discord or anything like that, and just genuinely caring about your teammates and then working through the issues.
Well, and they have a coach that lives that. I mean, D'Amico said it from the first question of his introductory press conference, said that my thing is I care about these guys as people. I want them to be better husbands and be better siblings and be better sons and things like that. And this is where, too, I got excited. I saw an interview that Aziz Alshire did. I think it was with Randy McAvoy. I saw a clip of it yesterday. And Aziz sounded like D'Amico. Like he was talking about being the leader of the defense, playing that position, but being able to be like being able to instruct and be critical of teammates in a constructive way. it's easier to do that if they know that you care about them as a person. When you connect with them on a personal level, it makes that communication so much easier. There's no contentiousness. There's no, this guy only cares about me as a player, not a person. I thought it was fascinating to see Aziz, the player, like almost mirroring what his head, and it stands to reason the guy was around D'Amico for his formative 4 years in the NFL, you know?
And I think in a lot of that, too, is just like, Elshire is just wise beyond his years in a lot of ways. Aziz Elshire, when he talks about his upbringing and everything, one of the most interesting things I saw, like I saw him say where, like, okay, this dude's just, this is a mature person.
Yeah.
He said when he got to college and he started meeting people from different backgrounds and everything, and he realized, like, oh, wow, a lot of people have had a lot of challenges in their life. And, like, oh, okay, like, this is, instead of, like, using it as, like, some banner to show how tough he is, he saw it as a way of, like, oh, okay, yeah, like, I've had hardships, but this person's had hardships, too.
Yes.
And, like, I can see how we relate to each other, even if we come from different backgrounds. I think CJ very much has that when it comes to, like, relating to guys from different backgrounds.
Yeah.
Like, Cade Stover and him couldn't have had more disparate childhoods and, like, in current region
friends.
Where they grew up, family life, everything else like that. And yet those two are like blood brothers, as described by CJ. It's really cool.
It's really, really cool. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Football Friday, getting you ready for Texans and Colts. Let's circle back to the Astros for a minute, though. Did the Alex Bregman contract extension that I think most Astro fans think is coming from somewhere else, Alex Bregman's new contract, did it get a little easier for the Astros in the last 48 hours to retain Alex Bregman? That is next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you. Football Friday. We'll get back to football in just a little bit. A little detour for the Astros here. They lose 1-0 to the Reds yesterday. Hunter Brown was amazing again. The bats were not. Brian Abreu gives up a home run to Ty France, who is basically Albert Pujols when he plays the Houston Astros. Ty France cannot be stopped. They're back at it tonight. They're back home for a series against the Diamondbacks this weekend. Diamondbacks, one of the hottest teams in baseball. Framber Valdez on the mound tonight. Good on good. Iron sharpening iron. It'll be fun tonight out at Minute Maid Park. As far as developments go with the Astros long-term over the last couple days, Matt Chapman, third baseman for the Giants, who is a Scott Boras client, was one of many Scott Boras clients who thought they were going to get a whole lot more money this past offseason than they did. Chapman ended up signing a Correa-type deal. Remember the deal Correa signed with the Twins the first time around, where it was a three-year deal for $100 million, but Carlos could say sayonara after any of the three seasons? It was very, very player-friendly in terms of the flexibility of the deal. And the Twins did that to get Carlos in the building, and it's worked out. He's a Minnesota Twin long-term now. Matt Chapman did the same deal, different dollar amounts, but same deal with the Giants. He signed a three-year, I forget what the dollar amount was, but it was the same style deal. It was a lot less than Matt Chapman thought he was going to be getting in free agency. Uh-huh. And he signed a three-year deal where he could opt out after each of the years. This is the first year of that deal. Well, Matt Chapman's been amazing for the Giants. He's been a very good hitter. He's been his usual, if not better, gold glove self defensively. So they went ahead and they gave Matt Chapman, Seth, 6 years, $151 million to remain. This is not an opt-out thing. This is a conventional six-year, $151 million deal to be the third baseman for the Giants. I think this is the template if Alex Bregman is to remain a Houston Astro. If you want Alex Bregman to stay here, This would be the one that I think that the Astros and Alex, both sides, could say.
Yeah, this
is
the
blueprint.
Like the kind of, right. And who knows what Alex Bregman feels about his value or what have you. But this is that compromise between the Astros are never very unlikely to give a 10-year deal ever, except for Alex Bregman. If it was something like this, this seems like a reasonable compromise.
Yeah.
And it's a precedent set where Alex Bregman can look at it and feel like, all right, given my, you know, my drawbacks as a player or what have you that have kept me from being like really, the perennial all-star or MVP candidate that at times it looked like he could have become, this one makes sense.
Their career paths are so similar. Matt Chapman and Alex Bregman are almost the same age. Chapman's a year older. Came in a year later. Bregman came into the big leagues in 2016. Chapman came in 2017. Early on in both of their careers, within the first 3 years, they were both top six or seven MVP candidates multiple seasons. Bregman and Matt Chapman. They're good, but not elite hitters. You know, Bregman's got, since 2020, Bregman's OPS is a little under 800. Chapman's is 755, so Bregman's a little better there. And I'm going since 2020 because that's, before 2020, Bregman was amazing. He had an OPS of over 1,000 in 2019. That Bregman, I don't know, is walking through that door again. It's been 5 years now since that. I think this is more who he is. They're both elite defensively. Chapman has won multiple gold gloves. I think Bregman could have easily won a gold glove last season. Their WAR, their wins above replacement, are almost identical. Bregman 38.6, Chapman 37.3. That's a cumulative stat just as to how good and win and effective they've been at helping their team win ball games. The big one, Seth, they share the same agent. So right. Scott Boras. So that's the biggest commonality in all of this is the same agent that did this deal for Matt Chapman is Bregman's deal. Now, Bregman doesn't think this is a good deal, 6 years, 151, or he wants significantly more years or money, then that's up to Scott Boras to go try and get it. I just think this just looks like too good a blueprint and too fortunate an occurrence if you're someone who wants to keep Bregman. Would you sign Bregman if you were Jim Crane to 6 years, $151 million?
I would. I'd feel good about it. Just because, and I know, I think with Bregman, there's peak Bregman, and then there's Bregman through his career on average. And the hard part about it, I think emotionally, I try to get over it, is that, yeah, he's going to go through his droughts. But he's very, very consistently and good defensively. And I try to take myself out of my Astros fandom uniform, take off my orange cap and my jersey and everything else like that. There are a lot of teams that are going to look at Bregman the same way they did at Correa, which is the playoff experience matters. I think the experience matters. The consistency defensively really matters. And you look at Bregman throughout his career in the playoffs. A, he's just got way more experience in the playoffs than just about every other player in baseball. And B, he's been the same guy. You just read off his career stats. They're about the same as what they are for his playoff stats. Yeah. He has a 790 OPS, which in the postseason, it's a lot harder to have a good OPS in the postseason. Yep. Face really good pitching all throughout. Other teams that aren't the Astros will look at Bregman as a guy that, like, you know what? This is exactly the kind of guy, just like the Astros did back in 2017, the kind of veteran player you bring onto a team that's just trying to get over the hump. And he's got his warts. He's not the perfect player or anything. But I just wonder, will the Astros look at him the same way? Or will they say, look, we cultivate guys that can do this in the playoffs, and we're not going to pay the premium for it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if it were a pitcher, like when Framber eventually walks, right? Yeah. If he walks, because Framber, like Kyle Tucker, Framber's got one more year of team control, and then he could be gone. And nobody talks about Framber in a long-term deal. I don't know why that is. Maybe because Tucker just gets more attention and Bregman. But it feels like nobody's brought up Framber lately about a long-term deal. So let's assume he walks. I do feel better about the Astros backfilling a starting pitcher than I do a position player. You know, that's been a little... I know Pena's been good in Correa's absence, but they haven't found a replacement for George Springer. You know, and I don't see anybody in the organization right now that gets me all hot and bothered at third base for Alex Bregman. Like, that's a trick.
He's off playing for the Blue Jays right now.
And even if it were Will Wagner, I would be like, all right, well, we'll see. He ain't Bregman, you know? So, 6 years, 151, I would do that if I were Jim Crane. I know 6 years is the exception to the rule that, you know, for a veteran player on a second contract kind of thing, but I would do this deal.
I think how the Astros handle Justin Verlander in the offseason will be interesting. That's the one. I think, honestly, Verlander, there might be more scrutiny and potential uproar over Verlander than with Bregman, in that if the Astros give him something that looks like a really generous deal just to stick around for an extra year.
Yeah.
I don't think I don't have the appetite for it right now just because he's old, you know? You go through an entire season and he's available for a few weeks and he's not available for a few weeks and he's working through a neck injury and all of that. If you get him at a really reasonable rate, that's one thing. But man, if they give him something that's way juicier than it feels like it should be, and then Bregman walks and gets a deal like this somewhere else, then I think people are going to be PO'd about
that. I think they will. I don't think that's going to happen. If I had to predict, I don't think that's going to happen, and here's why. Well, for one, Verlander needs to pitch better just to be in that conversation, for one. But let's say he gets back to being average, and Your concern is that they pay him for somebody who's way above average, which is a valid concern. I think there's two reasons why it wouldn't happen, Seth. One, they're paying a lot of people next year to not play baseball for the Astros. They're paying McCullers. They're paying, you know, they had to pay Montero to go away. They had to pay Abreu to go away. Their dead money is more than it's ever been through this time. So I think that diminishes the chances of them doing it. The other thing I would say is they've let Justin Verlander walk once already. You know, they let him go to the Mets, you know, and so.
And they got him back when the Mets were still paying a huge portion of his salary, right?
Yeah. So I'm not that concerned.
Know what it is? Part of it is just I fear the back of the baseball card.
Sure.
That mentality. Yeah. And Dana Brown will, you know, toe the company line and say back of the baseball card, but I don't think he's wired that way. Yep. And that's. Maybe this is one of those conversations where Dana Brown really starts to assert himself and has to just as firm a stand as you can take against the owner and whatever the owner wants. You got to say, look, this is a tough decision, but this is what we got to do. You know,
we'll see. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you heading into the 8 o'clock hour. J.J. Watt had Houston hyped yesterday. We will let you hear why coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.